It's Sunday, March 17th, and you are listening to In the Wheelhouse. ITW is a spontaneous discussion between two old friends on the Chicago Cubs and other baseball-related topics. I'm Tom Hockney.
And I'm Leo Fontana. Today on ITW, we talk about how MLB managers will now have to submit their lineups to odds makers before the media and the public get them. Also, there are some major milestones about to be surpassed this season. And MLB does also announce that there are going to be several rule changes this year and the next. Houston Astros manager A.J. Hinch and Angel Hernandez have issues. All that and the latest with the Chicago Cubs. Tom, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you too, Leo. So I got a little joke for you. What's Irish and stays out all night?
Anybody who lives in Chicago.
Patio furniture.
That's actually a joke I tell about my in-laws. What's Irish and sits around on the porch all day long, getting drunk, you know. not patio furniture, my in-laws. But anyway, you know, I got to tell you, St. Patrick's Day, I'm thinking about starting a campaign to just basically do away with the holiday altogether. It is just making me crazy.
No, I see. I think you're not looking at this from the right perspective. We're all getting older, so it becomes like an amateur night thing.
Yeah.
But I, at this point in my age, I like to see what kind of crazy shit happens.
Well, a lot of crazy shit happens. But, I mean, we went to this place out here, Hackney's,
yeah.
And it's just mobbed on St. Patrick's Day. And what it is, it's a big restaurant with a lot of small rooms. And then they
right.
send these bagpipes around. And it was driving me crazy last night. The place was so I seriously was about to lose it. So
yeah, you know, I think what you need to do is to buy a lot of groceries and booze on Wednesday of the week of St. Patrick's Day and just stay in the whole time.
I think.
And just follow the news and just smirk from time to time when, you know, some idiot is pissing green for 3 days or whatever.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm married into an Irish family, so this is just something I'm going to have to endure.
Right.
But the other good news is that spring has arrived to the shores of Lake Michigan in rather a modified form. At least you can kind of stand to be outside for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And it gives you the opportunity to actually step into mud before you step into the pothole.
Right, right. So, and that's a good thing. So I'm actually happy about that. And it's making me think that, you know, maybe we shouldn't necessarily have our heads examined for living here.
No,
so,
for sure. Well,
all right.
Spring has those three beautiful days.
Yeah, right.
They come and go, but they are beautiful. And it's where you want to be in Chicago for those 3 days every single time, every year when it happens.
It does rejuvenate the soul.
All
yes, right.
Sir.
Well, now let's get talking around the league. And this is a bit of a concern for me in that now that legal sports betting is, you know, the Supreme Court has allowed legal sports betting. Major League Baseball has gone into a partnership with a sort of data analysis firm out of Las Vegas, or an odds making firm called Sports Radar. And
right.
now Major League managers have to submit their lineups to this outfit, Sports Radar, a half an hour before the media and the fans receive it. And I'm not sure how I feel about this.
Yeah, we kind of covered this subject in the sense that if this is what has to happen to keep baseball going, it has to happen. I'm not a huge fan of the whole idea, but I will tell you, I think really this submitting the lineup thing in a year or so, no one will think twice about it. I just think, you know, change is hard for everybody.
It is. Maybe you're right. I'm hoping you're right on this one, because there's something that kind of stinks about it.
Agreed.
That this outfit gets them. And there are a lot of issues regarding their own integrity, where their employees have been betting ahead of
that's right.
the information being released to the public. So I don't like it.
I don't know how that's going to change, because the information is still going to be released. There's swarthy characters in the gambling world. Yeah, that's just the way that is. I try not to think about it, to be honest with you. When it comes to gambling in baseball, I try not to think about it. I remember what happened to Joe Jackson.
Well, you were
there. I'm being serious.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you actually saw Joe Jackson play. Right? So,
Wow, I set myself up for that.
All right. So now, also, in addition to the submitting the lineups, MLB has implemented new rule changes for this year and next. They had proposed them. Right. They said they weren't. Now they said they were. And some of the ones for 2019, we'll talk about them one by one. But the first one is no more waiver trades. Now, there'll be a fixed July 31st trade deadline. And they're going to do away with that sort of period in August where players could be traded as long as they cleared waivers. Now, I think this is good in the sense that it's a fixed period. There's going to be no funny business. It's a little clearer for most fans to sort of understand. But I also think it hurts the Cubs in the sense that Epstein and Hoyer, they knew how to exploit it, you know?
Yes. And the fact of the matter is, I have to be completely honest, I've never understood why that existed. To me, once the trade deadline is done, it should be done. It should be over and out. However, part of me thinks that allowing those moves at the end of the year is good for postseason baseball.
Absolutely.
And the reason is because teams stock up on players and, guys on their last, like Cole Hamels is a perfect example.
Well, and not just Hamels, but Daniel Murphy, who the Cubs bamboozled everybody on that one.
Agreed.
Because they were picking, they had the last, choice and they had the last pick in waivers, the last ability to be able to claim him. And he had cleared every team in Major League Baseball. Nobody thought that the Cubs would get him, and they snatched him right up. And I think that's just, the fact that everybody else was asleep at the wheel and the Cubs were paying attention, I think that was really helpful. So
intellectually, I feel as though this is a good rule. Because there's, you have your deadline and then, wait a minute, there's another deadline. But part of me thinks this is good for baseball in the sense that it's good for us fans to, and the end result is in late October and November when these players start to perform on playoff teams.
Now, there's been a change to the All-Star game, and they're going to add a $1 million cash prize to the winner of the Home Run Derby. And I think a lot of the bigger players are going to, they're going to want to get in on this.
Yeah. Aaron Judge on the Yankees said he would not participate, which I thought was interesting. I don't understand what this really changes because certain hitters believe that the Home Run Derby is a jinx. No one talks about it, but that there is that thing. So, but $1 million is $1 million.
Yeah, think about what you could do with that money. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. Joey, what's his name? Gallo is he wants to do it. Chris Bryant has posted on Twitter that this is something he might be interested in doing. I mean, it's a lot of money. All right. Another thing, reduced commercial breaks. They go from local broadcasts will be reduced from 2:05 to 2 minutes, 2 minutes and 5 seconds to 2 minutes. So it's a 5 second reduction. And national broadcast, now this is significant. It's going from two minutes and 25 seconds to 2 minutes again. Now, it's probably minor in its overall impact, but I also think it's significant in the sense that at least the owners recognize that their own desire for revenue might have something to do with the length of these games. So,
except there's one thing that those ads aren't going to change. So that extra almost half of a minute that they're saving per inning, really that just adds up to, another almost 5 minutes of ads that we're going to see at the beginning of the game or at the end of the game. I don't think that the ads change. I just think that they just rearrange them. That's what I think.
Yeah. Well, and it'll be interesting to see how this affects like the seventh inning stretch and things like that. But I think for the most part, it's good and it's a step forward. And it's at least, I think it's a recognition of the fact that the owners have been kind of in a money grab for the last 20 years. But now there's also going to be, and this was good, I felt, the creation of a joint committee of Major League Baseball players or Major League Baseball as an entity, and will also meet with the Players Association.
And this is about marijuana?
Yeah, this is about marijuana, whether or not we're going to legalize it. And maybe they can use it as an anti-inflammatory, you know. But
the Joint Committee?
The Joint Committee, exactly. No, but it's good because they can talk about issues pertinent to the game. And I think it's a way of sort of clearing the air and laying a framework for a new collective bargaining agreement. And
right.
I just think it's a good way to get the ball get the ball rolling and get them talking about important topics, you know.
Right.
So maybe solving problems before they become an issue that will cause them to strike. So, you know.
Any way that it helps the game, I'm all for it.
Now, mound visits, and this is the last one that's going to be implemented for this season. They've put the cap, they've lowered the cap from 6 to 5. Do you think that this will have a big deal?
Not really.
Yeah. I don't think so either. I don't think 6 had a big deal. You know, it was a big deal last year. And I don't think many teams, I don't think anybody got to 6 mound visits. You know, I don't think many teams got to 5.
So, there's ways to circumvent it anyway. So I just don't, I think that this is one of those things where it I think baseball thinks if they can keep it in the mind of the coaches, both the pitching coach, because this mostly is a pitching coach issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
How many pitching times you can send the pitching coach out because
– right.
But I don't know. I just don't see what – to speed up the game of baseball to me is a pretty obvious thing that they have to do, and I think they're trying to do it, and that is they have to get the pitchers to pitch to the hitters quicker.
And the other thing that was also significant in the Dan Szymborski article in FanGraphs is he said that baseball is trying to eliminate periods in time where nothing is happening and guys are just standing around. And I
correct.
Think that's probably smart. You know,
agreed.
You know, so all right. Now let's move on to the changes for 2020. In 2020, we'll see the return of the 15-day IL the injured list, not the disabled list. And you know, teams were exploiting this when it was the 10-day DL, and you'll see them do this year. They'd hold guys on the bench.
Correct.
And then they would put them on the 10-day DL retroactively. So then they'd only lose them for like 6 or 7 days. So,
yeah, it gave really give the manager another a GM, actually, another tool in their tool bag, really. Because I saw other manipulations, meaning that guys didn't come back that were healthy because there was the person that was taking his place was it like a left-handed hitter and they were facing a right-handed pitcher, stuff like that.
Yeah, so. And I guess this goes back to the way things were. So I'm not against it. I'm not really for it. It's just sort of whatever. All right. Now this is significant. Relief pitchers now must face a minimum of at least 3 batters. This is new for 2020. I've been thinking about this, going back and forth on this. I think ultimately it will be a good thing.
All they need to do is, to me, in my mind, is to do stuff like that, get rid of the shift. You know, there's other things that you can do that will speed up the game and make it more of an even balance between pitching and hitting. Because right now, to me, it's just all about that hitting arc is the story of baseball right now.
It really is. And then you think about a player like Anthony Rizzo, a left-handed slugger. You know, he doesn't, or a guy like Kyle Schwarber, I mean, they don't get to see a right-handed pitcher after the 7th inning, you know what I mean? Or after the 6th inning.
Right.
And it's really, really hard. Plus, they have to face the shift. It is difficult on those players. I think this kind of frees it up, where you might be able to get them, see an instance where they actually get to face a right-handed pitcher later in the game. And the way that Madden builds his lineups, where he likes to go lefty-righty, I think that this will be good for the Cubs, you know, and I think good for baseball long-term. But the other thing is, too, one thing I did notice in the article that it cited that there were fewer one-batter matchups this season than I think in like the last maybe 9 or 10 seasons. And that may be due to the fact that Tony La Russa is retired, but I once saw him use 3 different relief pitchers in 1 inning. I was ready to kill him. But
Sparky did that kind of stuff too, situationally. But you know, again, you and I have talked to this into the ground. Really, we know. To me, there's a couple of minor tweaks that they need to do to the game of baseball. I think if you talk to some of the old guys from 100 years ago, and they you brought this information to them, they would probably say, "Don't overthink this."
Yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, it probably won't make that much of a difference because it doesn't apply if the inning finishes. So if you finish the inning, then you don't have to come back out and face two more hitters.
So it raises so many questions that it's just like, really?
Yeah. All right. So now the roster in 2020 will be expanded from 25 to 26 with an additional expansion in September to 28. So they're not going to allow the big 40-man rosters in September when they call up all the minor league players to give them a taste of life in the major leagues.
That's a mistake. A mistake. Yeah, oh yeah. I told you before, I like seeing those players come up for a myriad of reasons.
Well,
it spells the good team's players for a little while, and right. That's an important thing. I don't know.
Well, I think I got mixed feelings about it. I think an additional two players or three players overall on the roster allows that. You know, because you're going to bring in, I mean, if you're in a pennant race, there are probably still games you want to win. But if you want to spell a starter, you can at least put in a player who's having a quality season. I think it's good. It's good because it does add a 26 man to the roster, which is an additional job for a major league player. So that's good for the union as far as their perspective. And then it does save the team's money because they don't have to pay the league minimum prorated salary to all these guys. So I think it's good, and it's good overall. We'll see how it works. All right. Now, and the last thing is, as a result of the roster expansion, players will now be designated as either pitchers or position players. And two-way players have to receive a special status and a special exemption. So a guy like Shohei Ohtani, who can pitch and hit and play a defensive position, will have to pitch at least 20 innings and also will have to appear as a position player in at least 20 games in order to be able to pitch at any time. Otherwise, position players can only be allowed to pitch if they're behind six runs or more, or in an extra inning. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing too.
I just think that the 20 games as a hitter is very, very restrict. Ohtani is the only player that would qualify.
He is the only one who qualifies. He's the only one who qualifies last year. And there are these guys like Michael Lorenzen who plays for Cincinnati. He's that pitcher for Cincinnati who, you know, he hit like four home runs last year. You know, they used him as a pinch hitter. He's somebody who could, you know, they could slot in that way. So I don't know. I mean, I like the idea.
What about that guy, Matt Davidson?
Davidson is another one. Exactly. Yeah. So there are several guys out there who may fall into this category. I like the fact that they're sort of creating a sort of status for them. So, All right. Enough about new rules.
Yeah.
Angel Hernandez, I think, is out of his mind.
Right.
He ejected Astros manager A.J. Hinch after a single pitch in the bottom of the first inning in a spring training game.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on?
Well, because it's a carryover from a conversation they had the week before when, you know, Hinch says, how many bad calls do you get in a game? and Hernandez said four as an average. And Hinch walked out of the dugout saying, you've used your four bad calls after one pitch. I might throw you out for saying that too. But
everybody hates Hernandez.
Angel Hernandez has a I feel bad for him, a terrible reputation because when the final wiki page is written on you, there's no way that it's going to be written without covering off on the subject that people hated you.
Yeah, they cannot stand him. That his strike zone is terrible. The hitters can't stand him. The pitchers can't stand him. So
the biggest criticism of Hernandez will always be his inconsistency. It's not that he makes bad calls. It's like there's no rhyme or reason to his bad calls.
Right. And guys like him and Joe West are really a problem.
Well, West is a better umpire than Hernandez is. That's right. My point. If you go back, Angel Hernandez has been involved in a lot of bad stuff, in my opinion. I can't believe, in all honesty, I can't believe he's still an umpire.
Yeah, but they have a union. They have a union,
but they're scrutinized. So he must be passing some tests to be able to keep his job. I can't stand the guy.
Well, the thing that's funny is that we did bring up Joe West, and you're right. Joe West is a much better umpire. Joe West is just vindictive. You know,
correct.
Joe West is just a
correct.
Dick. You
correct.
Know, Hernandez is bad, you know.
Yep, exactly. They're right.
So I sent you an article from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and it wasn't an article, but basically it was a collection of archived photographs from Cardinal spring trainings going all the way back to the 30s. And I was curious if any of them stood out.
Well, the only thing that stood out is that my computer locked up trying to view these all these photographs in a scroll. That I don't know which website is worse when that happens, St. Louis or Fangraphs. Fangraphs is pretty bad. But, you know, I went through the photographs. I thought it was, you know, some of them I've seen before. I hadn't seen that one of Bob Gibson.
Right. With the ball 71. Looks like it's on top of his head. You know
right,
I mean?
Right. On top of his cap. Right. You know, some interesting photographs. Mostly it was the Stan Musial story.
Yeah, right. It was the Stan Musial story, but there was a great shot of Stan Musial and Ted Williams in the or the locker room during the rain delay, and that was kind of cool.
Yep.
And, you know, so that was nice. It was good to see, you know, and seeing these pictures of Musial as a young man, you know, you really admire him. There was one really strange one of three left-handed pitchers in the locker room with their shirts off, all just sort of standing there holding a ball with their left hand. There was something kind of homoerotic about it. I don't know.
I missed that. Thank God.
That was kind of strange. But anyway, and there was a last one. This was a bizarre one where all the Cardinal pitchers were sort of standing with their hands on their knees, stooped over, while the manager, Eddie Stanky, demonstrated how to slide.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just a silly, I don't know.
Actually, you know what? I thought that was one maybe the best actual photograph from a technical standpoint. You know, it's hard to describe on a podcast about photographs.
That's true.
It looks strange. It's like talking about music. There's something wrong about that. Just play the goddamn music.
The last one I want to mention is this guy, Herm Weinmeier. Is walking down the street in Florida with his family.
Right.
And he's got a pretty hot wife, I got to say. But all right. So let's move on. We'll go to, let's see. Oh, you mentioned this. You submitted this. Miguel.
I want to change that and talk about that during the milestones period because there's a connection there. I don't know whether you noticed this week, but Julia Ruth Stevens.
Yes.
The last surviving adopted daughter of Babe Ruth.
Adopted daughter, exactly.
And a decades long champion of his legacy is the way the obituary read. And she died at age 102. And it is so true because back when Camden Yards first opened up, Joe Side and my brother Brian and myself, we actually went to, I think it was the second game ever at Camden Yards, home game ever. I'm pretty sure it was the second or third home game. It wasn't the first one. But and she still was there because if you remember when they built that stadium, it was built on Babe Ruth's birthplace. The outfield is where Babe Ruth was born. And so I can attest to the fact that this woman has been carrying the torch for Babe all these years, even though Babe, when he was her father, when she was a little girl, wasn't what you would call your, you know, Ozzie and Harriet kind of dad.
No, he wasn't what you would call a great family man. But you know, it's hard to know what happened. But I do know this about Babe Ruth: he loved children.
Yes,
you know,
he loved.
He really would, as long
as they were cooked right.
Ouch! No, but seriously, he would go out of his way to see children in hospitals. Now, a lot of that was played up by sports writers, but at the same time,
it was true, yes.
Whenever children were around, he was always very gracious.
He liked children better than he liked adults. He said that many times.
So maybe he was very good. You know, he adopted this girl, maybe she didn't have a perfect life, but perhaps it was better than being raised in an orphanage, and at least she probably didn't want for anything.
And she grew up in awe of her great father, and that lasted her entire life.
Oh, yeah. And he was a great man. I mean, he's bigger than life. He's an American legend. This is part of American mythology.
I still say he's the greatest baseball player ever, and there's been a lot of great ones since him. But, you know, after you hit the 714 home runs, then win me the 92 games, including some critical World Series games.
That's right. Yeah,
it was a great anyhow, player. I sent you a link as part of the show thing to I came across an article that I think is pertinent for this particular show during this part of the spring training. And basically what this is it covers off on big name stars that are close to milestones for 2019. And some of them are significant. Some of them are not significant at all. And I'll kind of skip over them, but I just wanted to kind of get your take. CC Sabathia and Justin Verlander are both within striking distance of the 3,000 strikeout club. And every pitcher that has 3,000 strikeouts is in the Hall of Fame except Clemens and Schilling. So
whose names are on the ballot in, you know, currently. And so they could be elected. I don't know. Schilling might be. Clemens probably won't, or at least they'll wait a long time.
I think that unfortunately that both of them will go in before it's all said and done. But the point is Sabathia is only 14 strikeouts away, so he's a shoo-in.
He'll get it. Yes, he will.
And Verlander, I think, needs almost 300 strikeouts, so it's unlikely that he'll do it this season.
He's 294 strikeouts. He could do it, but it's probably not going to happen. But he did have 290 last year. So he could do it, but we'll see.
Correct.
We'll see what happens.
Correct. Albert Pujols is on the cusp of something that's really, really significant from the hitting side of the field, and that is he is 18 shy of 2,000 RBIs.
Wow. Yeah. And that's only two players have reached since a figure that only two players have reached since the RBI became an official stat in 1920. And he's, you know, that's significant. You know, he really, I mean, it goes to show. I mean, what is he at 600 home runs now, too? So, you know, it's amazing the numbers, the counting numbers that this guy has put up. And it goes to show just what an amazing player he was in the first maybe 2/3 of his career. You know, he's really a shell of what he was, you know, five, seven years ago. But, you know, he still plugs along, and he's
racked up 5,652 total bases, it's an unbelievable number that, you know, he's 100 shy of Pete Rose for eighth all time.
That's crazy.
He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. The only slight on Pujols will always be that whenever he was in a room, in the very next room, they were whispering about steroids.
Yeah, I think that may be the case. I would really like to know I wish there was some way we could know for sure.
Right.
You know, I like to think that he hasn't been on them. I think Cardinal fans certainly would like to believe the same. But when you look at that body, you can't help but think that it may be the case. All right, so now your guy, Miguel Cabrera, the great Detroit Tiger, is also on the verge of getting to 500 home runs.
Yeah, and he did something interesting that I know that you love.
Yeah.
This past week in a spring training game against Minnesota, I can't not only remember the Minnesota player's name, I couldn't pronounce it if I could, but Miguel Cabrera pulled off the old hidden ball trick at first base.
I saw the video on that where he – there was a throw to first with a runner on first. He tagged him while he was on the bag.
Correct.
And then he made a move, and he pretended to throw the ball back to first.
Right.
And then the runner took his lead, and he tagged him out. And but here's my question. Why do you waste that on spring training, on a spring training game?
Well, first of all, Miguel is very playful.
He's
always struck me as being kind of like that lion that, purrs with you and then eats you, you know.
He likes to play with his food before he kills it.
But he's got a very playful side to him.
He does.
But whenever I see the hidden ball trick anywhere, whether it's at first or third, isn't there a base coach there that's supposed to have, isn't that their job? Like, if your job is to stare at the base of the player, aren't you supposed to alert the player he still has the ball in his glove?
That's right. That's right. He must have been reading the stock report or something. I don't know.
Right.
First base
right.
coaches are notoriously, they don't do anything. I mean, it's just.
Right. Know. They're like Chicago Politicos.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
So Miggy is on the cusp of 500 home runs.
He needs 35. He needs 35.
And that's significant because I don't believe that Miggy is a steroid guy. He's always been a fat kid. going back to even when he was little.
Yeah, yeah.
So
now, when he was a young player, he was a big sort of – he looks like he's in terrible shape, but he is one
right.
of the best hitters I've ever seen.
Ever, you know, ever.
Yeah,
he's
really...
a first ballot. The point is they're trying to make a case for these milestone players about Hall of Fame, and virtually all of them are Hall of Famers we're talking about. But
yes.
I think that Cabbie is a slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer. And
well,
the reason is
yeah.
if you break that, he's won the World Series. If you he won the Triple Crown, which
yeah.
that in itself is extraordinary. I just think, you know, I'm biased because I'm a Tiger fan, but I think Miggy, he could get hit by a truck tomorrow. I hope he doesn't, but he would waltz into the Hall of Fame.
I think in this case, your bias is actually warranted.
Yeah.
I think citing the Triple Crown and just his, you know, World Series victories or appearances and all of his success on the field. He did win a World Series with Florida. So
that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
right.
he's got that on his resume. He's done it all. I mean, right. I don't think he's ever won a Gold Glove, nor will he, but he was a pretty decent corner outfielder when he first came up. That's for sure.
Now, Clayton Kershaw is 121 strikeouts behind Sandy Koufax for third all-time on the Dodgers franchise list.
That's astounding.
That is astounding. And he could do it, but he's been injured, so that could be a problem. Robinson Cano is close to 2,500 hits, and it seems like he could very well reach 3,000. What do you think of Cano these days?
He's going to struggle to make it into the Hall of Fame, even if he does get to 3,000 because of the steroids.
Really? Yeah. Well, I mean, he would need to contribute to a Mets team that had some postseason success. If he did that, I think that would boost him.
Yes, you're absolutely right. But as he stands now, there's a bunch of steroid guys waiting to get in that are ahead of him.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the problem.
And it does create a bit of a logjam. Yadier Molina on the games caught leaderboard is making his way up. So what is it? I'm trying to think. He's 1,836 games behind the plate, and he's just behind Benito Santiago, Al Lopez, Jim Soto. It's a lot of games.
Right.
You know, so, and I think
the most handsome manager in baseball, Brad Asmus.
Now, Bruce Bochy is also on the all-time wins leaderboard. He could move into the top 10 if the Giants have a good year. But this is definitely Bochy's last season.
Right.
So because he's retiring for health reasons. And so I don't know. I don't know. I'd like to see him do it. I think he deserves it. And I also think he's a Hall of Fame manager.
See, I was going to say, the point is moot. Doesn't matter whether he does or he doesn't. He won three World Series. He's going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It's just that simple.
It is that simple. Yeah.
That's the measurement for manager. You win three World Series, that's extraordinary.
No, he's had a lot of success with that team. And that's winning World Series. You know, the Giants had never – won a World Series since they had been in San Francisco. So that's
not just that. I think it's much, much harder to put together dynasties today. Much harder.
Yeah.
And he basically, what was it? Every
other year. So over the course of six years, he won three World Series, which is really something.
Yeah. You know? Yep. I just think that he will always be considered one of baseball's greatest managers.
All right. So let's move on to the Chicago Cubs. Cubs TV. Have you seen this? I've gone ahead and I've subscribed to it. It's a YouTube channel. And basically, it is highlight packages. It's interviews with players. It's stuff off the field with them playing around and trying to do funny stuff like skits and things like that. Like they did this thing where they had Anthony Rizzo and they had Chris Bryant's wife. And then Chris would ask them a series of questions to see which one knew him the best. And it was absolutely ridiculous, you know, but then there were other things like they broke down the David Bodie game-winning grand slam against the Washington Nationals, you know, and all the people who were on base and how they got on base, and they interviewed all of them, and it was pretty interesting. I think it's something you may want to check out.
Well, we talked about this briefly a couple of weeks ago because, you know, as we all know, the Cubs are going to their own TV network, which I feel like that's fine. But what are you going to do for the other times of the year when baseball isn't on? I think you're going to struggle from a content standpoint unless it's only going to open up during the season and shut off when the season's over. That because if you're going to run it 24/7, 365 – where's that content coming from? I think you're going to be you're going to have a hard time staying in the business.
No, and that's what's interesting about this YouTube channel is that's kind of a testing ground for content. You know what I mean? They're going to see what people like to watch, and then they'll maybe create programming around that. So, you know, so I think it's good.
And for our listener out there that's listening today, remember, this is in the wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So come to our channel. We'll give you just all that information. You don't have to waste your time with these YouTubers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Bunch of slackers. Anyway, all right. Now, Nico Horner is the guy the Cubs drafted last year with the 25th pick.
It sounds like a porn name.
Yeah, it does sound like a porn name. But this kid is opening some eyes. They invited him to the big league camp, and he's hitting. He's playing the position really well. Are we looking at Addison Russell's replacement? And do you think we'll see him up with the big club this year?
These are all very good questions. It's hard to say. I'm not familiar with Nico in the sense does the club have certain ownership of him so that they're going to hold him out until certain days that he can come up. Is that the case here or not? I don't know.
That's a good question. And I mean, I don't think because he was such a low draft pick, or at least he was a first round draft pick, they don't think that he'll command. They won't have the kind of issues in terms of salary demands that a Chris Bryant would, which is why you kind of held him back to get that extra year of control.
I think there was
concern.
He's not a bonus. He's not a bonus baby.
He's not a bonus. I mean, he's a bonus baby, but he's not a super bonus baby.
Right.
You know, like Eloy Jimenez. So I think that with some of the problems that Russell has had with his domestic violence or domestic abuse suspension, and just the fact that he just hasn't really played that well, at least as far as hitting, I think he's ready to take his place. I don't know if he'll play shortstop, but I think he's ready to take his place on that roster, you know?
Yeah, I got to see more data on this one. I have to be honest with you. I just need to see more of him playing to make that call, because I've heard these discussions many times following baseball of how they're going to be the next greatest thing, and they're not. And as much as Addison Russell remains in my doghouse, he had some huge contributions over time, including
a big
playoff home run, as I recall.
Or even a couple of big plays. Yes. No. You're right. And maybe he could, but I think that also the stigma of the domestic violence or domestic abuse thing may be too difficult to keep him on the roster long term. But anyway, I think they think he can replace him. And it probably, though, won't be this year because he is just out of college. The one thing that I will say about Horner, too, is that scouts were talking about him, and they were saying – they asked a college coach, you know, what's this kid like? And the college coach said he's the best college player I've ever managed. So the scout thought, well, I kind of take that stuff with a grain of salt.
Yep, right.
Then they brought him to camp, and he's like, yeah, he is. He's that good. So we'll see. All right, Pedro Strop tweaks a hamstring. He assures everyone he'll be ready for opening day, but in the event he's not, should they go out and get Craig Kimbrel?
Well, that's a huge stretch right there.
Well, not really when you consider that they won't be starting the season with Morrow or Strope. That's a possibility.
Right.
You know, but I'm against it, though.
The Cubs bullpen scares the hell out of me. It has scared the hell out of me since they won the World Series, to be honest with you. Since they got rid of Chapman.
They were actually good last year, though. The numbers show that they had like the second best bullpen.
Until Carl Edwards would pitch in critical situations and completely fuck it up.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how that gets fixed, but you're right. But they have guys who can contribute. I don't know.
Yeah, and Strope is one of those guys. So, but then you know, we go over the Rainbow Bridge to getting Craig Kimbrel. That to me, that's I struggle that the Cubs would lay out that kind of money at the 11th hour when they've been so fiscally patient, and I think rightly so, in my opinion. I wouldn't have gone after either Machado and Harper in the big, not for the money that they were asking. If you want to play for $5 million a year, sure, but they weren't willing to do that. So, I'm a big Pedro Strop fan, and I think if he's healthy, he'll be fine. The only problem is a hamstring typically is a whole year process. That's been my experience. Well, it's tweaked and it hurts, and it's just you don't have that same push off leg strength that you did when you didn't have any hamstring issue at all.
Well, fortunately, it wasn't a serious strain. It was just a little bit of a twinge, and he took himself out just to make sure that he would be okay. So
yeah, we shall see.
We're optimistic, but I think you are right that if they were to acquire Kimbrel, that's a desperate move, and that just isn't in the DNA of the Cubs front office.
Not this year. I get the feeling like they're laying in wait for something, and what that is, I don't know. But and here's another thing, too. This is based on the fact that Morrow and Strop are going to come back. I'd more spend that money on Dallas Keuchel than Kimbrel. Yeah, and I just don't think they're going to do it. I just don't think it's going to happen.
No, you're right. All right. So now we talked last week that John Lester was the number one. He's been named the ace. Yeah. How do you set the rest of the rotation? Because that has not been sort of determined.
No. And I think that, you know, I think I would go with Lester.
Hendricks,
and then Darvish, and then Quintana. And then Hamels.
So Hamels would be your fifth.
Yeah, because here's my reason why. I think Hamels can't pitch a full season. They have to figure a way. I mean, he could, but you're going to see like a 10-16 performance. And so I think they have to really keep him supercharged, especially at the end of the year. I'd almost shut him down at the end of August.
Like you limit his starts is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Because I already saw it in spring training. I've been watching the games pretty closely. And the fact is
he got knocked around
the other day. He got knocked around, but good.
Yeah. It's as you like to say, the Sox were hitting him like he owed them money.
Exactly.
But we'll see. I don't like to project what happens in spring training towards the regular season.
You can try, but you can't.
Yeah, and it's weird pitching out there in the sort of thin air of Arizona, you know, with those high skies they talk
about.
It's
not even that. Thoroughbred pitchers aren't ready to go until June or July. Most all of them would tell you that. Any of them that have early success are just the great pitchers. There's just some pitchers that pitch well at any time, but most pitchers don't get warmed up until, you know.
So you're saying that he will contribute, but he may not contribute.
I don't think you could give him the ball every 4 or 5 days. I think you can give it to him every 5 days and then every 10 or 15 days. And that's I'm serious. I would keep him fresh and not get him ticked off at me. But I'd be hiding from him in the dugout if I was his manager, because I full well that he wants to pitch. But I would have done that with John Lackey, too, in the latter part of his Cubs career.
Yeah, just limit the amount of times he starts, because he was actually better on a lot of rest.
Correct.
So, all right. So the Cubs and Sox renewed their cross-desert rivalry in what can only be termed as a bloodbath in the desert.
Yeah.
An offensive bloodbath. What happened?
Well, it was one of those great games that you want to have on in the background, because you just keep looking up and going, whoa, what just happened?
Another one flew out. Yeah, right.
Well, but they tied each other through like the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh inning, or seemingly. Yeah. Every inning it was 4-4, 5-5, 6-6. And then the Cubs were able to pull out a win. But there was a great three-run homer by Moncada of the White Sox.
Juan Moncada, who may finally – be living up to his potential.
Maybe that was the one I came away going, whoa, who was that guy? Oh, that's Moncada.
Well, isn't he he's a switch hitter, or is he
want to get into his personal life, but I think
he is a left-handed hitter, at least. He may be a switch
hitter. Yes. No, but this was a right-handed home run.
Okay. And they're also moving him to third base. He's not going to play second, which I think helps him. I think it's a better position for him because right. I don't think he was, I don't know that he always knew exactly what he should be doing at second, whereas third, he can rely more on his sort of quick reflexes because right. at second, you kind of have to, he's still young. Positioning was an issue for him. So, you know, all right. So good for them. Let's see. People seem to be worried that the Cubs dynasty is coming to an end. Do you agree?
Yeah, well, I think that these are questions that should have been asked 2 years ago in the wake of them winning the World Series is what, to me, I would be like, you know, you had a taste of this. How do you get back? And so at this point, I think that they're trying to build another. I just don't think it's the same dynasty.
No, of course not. No.
And so it's perplexing to me. And I'm reading all the previews for 2019, and they all seem, you know, what's going on with the Cubs and their dynasty. And that's just baseball today. To right now is played season at a time. It's not dynasties anymore.
You're right.
The Red Sox are going to figure that out pretty damn quick. Well, just like Houston. Remember Houston? We're not the Cubs. We're not going to.
Yeah, you are.
Shut it.
Exactly. but you know what's interesting, though? At least, I mean, maybe the dynasty has ended. But baseball writers love to write the epitaph for all these players and all these teams. Their reign has come to an end. They love stories like this. From my point of view as a fan, going into this season, they're at least relative. They have a chance. You know, five, 6 years ago, they weren't, they had no chance.
Right.
You know, and this was the case for years and years and years. They're at least relevant. I, as a fan, for the time being, I'm satisfied. And once this marquee network gets going, my expectation is they're going to take that extra revenue and they're going to put it in the team to improve it. So, you know,
that's a perfect segue to talk about Wrigleyville Alderman Tom Tunney, who was reelected in the most recent election. And he's had a very acrimonious relationship with the Ricketts family. And apparently the Ricketts offered an olive branch to which Mr. Tunney was slightly indifferent to. Tunney is doing everything he can to protect the old way of Wrigleyville, and the Cubs obviously wanted to build.
They want to build Coney. They want to build Coney Island,
like a Disneyland for the Cubs. That's my take on it, and I'm kind of caught somewhere in the middle because I remember the old days, being a former season ticket holder for 1 year.
I loved the old days were great.
They were great. But I also am pragmatic enough to think that, you know, you gotta stay modern and move forward. So
no, and I agree with you there too. I mean, you know, if we have to sacrifice some of the things that we enjoyed maybe 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when we first, you know, when I first moved here in the 90s, I used to love, you know, hanging out at Wrigley Field, just getting into the ballpark, buying a single ticket, being able to sit practically anywhere I wanted, you know, and it was wonderful. But I also realized that the price of having a winning team means that they're going to try to max out some of their revenue opportunities. And we have to strike a balance. I recognize, though, that Wrigleyville is, you know, where the Cubs are located, it's not like other baseball parks. That's in the middle of a city, in the middle of a neighborhood where people live and go to work and hang out in gay bars. And you know what I mean? And it's just, they have to be sensitive to what their presence means for a lot of these businesses and these residents, you know? And Tunney, I think, for better or worse, represents the interests of the residents.
No doubt. He's drawn that line in the sand many, many moons ago. So just real briefly before we hang up for today, the Cubs made their most recent cuts to get their roster down to seemingly a major league level.
Yes.
And they cut one of my favorite players from a name standpoint. I don't know too much about him. But whenever I hear his name, it makes me think of Don Finucci from Godfather 2. but his name is Aducci, I think, is the
Aducci,
last name.
Aducci, yeah.
An infielder.
I don't know much about this guy.
But
you know, but hopefully he's, you know, maybe they'll, I don't know. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, well, apparently he pissed off the Cubs because not only was he asking for more at-bats, but he was trying to collect the street tax.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, sure.
But a dum-dum. So next week, before we hang up, yeah, is where we're going to make our picks for who we think are, what teams yeah are going to finish where. And, you know, we do this on an annual basis, and so our fan can look forward to that.
Yeah, you can basically, when we make our picks, you, the listener, you can bank on them. You know,
right,
you'll know that, that this is what's going to happen. All right.
Yep.
So anyway, all right, Tom, I'll talk to you next week. And it's always a pleasure. You have a good one. Okay.
You do as well.
All right. Bye. See you later. Bye.